Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm the Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn and the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back with you again today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as to how you utilize the information we provide today and take full accountability for the decisions you make and a resulting outcome. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. This is a very special weekend. It's Father's Day weekend. It's also a very unique time in our workplace and world where the career search has never been more complex. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Bill Humbert. Bill's recruiting experience reaches back before computers were even on the desks, all the way back in 1981. Bill speaks nationwide to companies, associations, colleges, and universities on talent attraction and career search. He knows the pitfalls and successes of job search from the employer's perspective better than almost anyone. And he's also a father, two wonderful children, and a grandfather as well. Last but not least, he's an author of multiple books, the latest being entitled Expect Success: The Science of the Over 50 Career Search. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Bill.
Greg, it's so great to be back with you.
Yes, I should have mentioned we did a show all the way back in, I think it was June of 2018. So welcome back, certainly. Thanks so much for coming back.
Great to be here.
The pleasure is ours. Bill, we always like to ask, just to give some context for our listeners, what city and state are you speaking from this morning, please?
I am in the Salt Lake City Olympic town of Park City, Utah.
You have just made this host and the listeners very, very jealous. Never been there, but I hear it's one of the most beautiful places on God's green earth, sir.
It is.
That's great. Sadly, Bill, we've only got 30 minutes. We could speak for hours about your incredible life. This book, we're now going to just jump right into the deep end of the pool. There is no doubt that job searching has changed drastically over the last few years. Share with us about some of these changes, please.
You know, Greg, it has changed and it hasn't changed. And what has changed is all of the ways to find who is looking for people and what they're looking for. That part has changed. What has not changed is the best way to find a new position is to network into it. And too often, what happens is people believe all this advertising from all these job boards. And so what they do is they go, I'm going to post my application onto this job board, and then I'm going to pray that the right person is looking at it.
Doesn't sound like a real good formula. I'm sorry to say that.
It isn't. And not only that, the right person rarely is looking at it.
Wow, that's amazing. I love what you said there, how things have changed, but yet some of the things have remained the same. Let's peel the onion a little bit more because we know you're a top expert in this field, Bill. What's your number one job search secret? Share it with us, please.
Now, Greg, just understand, I'm just sharing it with you and all of your audience.
Thank you. Thank you.
The number one, and this is important, I'll give you some metrics. The Please. Number one way to find a job is networking. And the metrics are, if you 74 to 76% of all jobs are filled through networking.
Wow.
And this goes back, the outplacement companies, career transition companies, they track metrics on how people that come into their system find jobs. And that's where that figure comes from. 74 to 76% are filled through networking. And then break it down a little further. If you only network with two people per week, it will take you 1 year to find a job. If you network with 10 people per week, it will take you 6 months to find a job. And if you network with 20 people per week, you'll find a job in 90 days. And you know what? Almost every person that I coached who followed that right to a T have found a job almost right on that 90-day mark.
Could you repeat those statistics again, Bill? Because I'm a bit overwhelmed to hear them, and I want the listeners and me to hear those again, please.
So 74 to 76% of all jobs are filled through networking. If you network with two people per week, it'll take you 1 year to find a job. If you network with 10 people per week, it will take you 6 months to find a job. And if you network with 20 people per week or four a day, it will take you 90 days to find a job.
Boy, the exponential return on networking is staggering. Oh, that is absolutely amazing. Now, one of the reasons we wanted you back on Thank God for Monday, this great title, Expect Success, The Science of the Over 50 Career Search. Bill, I'm going to ask a question I really don't want to ask, but I really have to ask it this time. Is ageism really a thing? And if so, is there really anything we can do about it? Help us out, please.
Well, you know, as a recruiter, I'm not allowed to judge age. And, you know, it's funny, people say, well, how old do you think that person is? Well, I've been recruiting since 1981, and I haven't looked at that. So I'm terrible at judging people's age. So ageism can be a thing. There's certainly, you know, there's people who have prejudice against something about everybody, right? I know they have prejudice about me. I don't know what they are necessarily. Maybe I talk too much, but... But I know they have prejudice against me somehow, somewhere. Ageism can be a thing. However, this is how I coach people. If they feel that age is a reason why the company is not going to hire them, they don't want to work there anyway. Because if they do hire them, they're not going to listen to them.
Wow. Oh, that is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. No question about that. And being almost 65 myself, having 40 years of experience between pharmaceuticals and higher education, not that I know everything, certainly, I hardly know any, but there is some seasoning that I have that maybe someone who's half my age doesn't have. No disrespect to them. I think there's an incredible amount of knowledge, skill, talent. You've written this great book, The Science of the Over 50, that those who are a bit more seasoned can bring to the party. I don't know if you agree with me or not.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, as a recruiter, even back in the 1980s, I can think of one gentleman, the Washington Post was my go-to company.
Oh.
And I recruited, oh, geez, I don't even know how many, but probably at least 10. Back in those days, we call them data processing professionals, a programmer analyst. And one of the gentlemen that I found was a Bengal tiger during World War II.
Oh, and my.
He was 62 or 63, I don't remember. And the Washington Post hired him. And he worked there
Wow.
for 3 or 4 years and he was successful. And, you know, that was great. So it's, you know, it can be a thing. I recruited a director of IT audit for a major corporation you may have heard of, Transamerica.
Yes.
And the manager asked me, he said, well, I've got this one person and then I got this other person, and I introduced both to him and he liked both of them.
Wow.
And he said, but I like the older guy better, but you know, he's 65. He's probably gonna leave me in 2 years. And I
Oh.
said, you know, Rich, I got bad news for you. The 49-year-old guy could leave early too. So why don't you take the guy you like best, do a nice job with him? And so he was in the office down in St. Petersburg, Florida. And 2 years later, he did leave, but he was promoted to the office in Cedar Rapids as the
Oh,
director of all their IT audit.
wow. Oh, that is absolutely, what a great story. Absolutely, no question about it. So, unequivocally, we need, in a very Franciscan way, to remember that our biases only detract from the workplace, and we really miss out on great talent, great people when we have these biases. Now, again, I love the subtitle of this book, The Science of the Over 50 Career Surge. We just talked about the importance of networking. Phil, does science impact networking? And if so, how, please?
Well, it really does. Think about the different sciences. There's actually four different sciences that impact a career search.
Wow.
Number one is computer science, so job boards. Number
Sure.
two is mathematical science, the numbers tracking your metrics. Number three is the psychological science. And that mostly is up here in your head.
Yes.
And then number four is the social science, because you have to fit the culture of the company. So that's the social science.
Oh, wow. So science does have a significant impact on the networking net.
Then on everything,
Wow.
because the person that you're networking with. But first of all, let's say you got on LinkedIn and you found some people to network with. So now you're using the computer science. You have your numbers of people that you have to talk to. You got to talk to four every day. That's the mathematical science. The psychological science is how you approach that other person and how they feel about you. And then the social science, even during networking, they're trying to figure out if you fit into their culture.
Wow. So I could see a direct link, as you say, between the science and the whole job search process, something I never considered, nor have we ever spoken about here on Thank God for Monday. Now, one of the things over the years we've talked about is resumes. But it's so hard because it seems like the concepts around resumes change over the course of time. Really curious, Bill, in your great expert opinion, what's a winning resume look like today in 2023?
So, Greg, keep in mind that I've read over 400,000 resumes since 1981.
That is amazing.
So
Wow.
I know a little bit about resumes. And in 1993, my assistant measured the amount of time that I spent looking at resumes, at each resume, and she timed me. And when I was done going through about a stack of 150 IT professional resumes, she said, you spent as little as 2 seconds on a resume, and you put those into the definitely interested or definitely not interested stack. You spent as much as 12 seconds on a resume, and most of those went into the definitely not interested or the very painful, I'll take another look stack.
Oh, wow.
you average 6 seconds a resume.
Oh.
So you have, as a career seeker, you have 6 seconds to get my attention.
How does someone do that?
Well, you know, the way you do it is you put a summary up there at the top. And the summary has, you start with action verbs, and you know, past tense action verbs with each sentence. And you put some of your accomplishments in the summary. And so now you caught my eye. And now I'll drop down into the resume, and you can put the exact same sentence down below to make it easier for a person to see where it was. Now, if all of your accomplishments were 10 years ago, I'm going to say, what's he or she been doing for the past 10 years?
Oh, wow, that's fascinating. Yes. Yeah, no question about it.
And then, you know, that's not the only time I look at the resume. And then I'll spend 30 seconds on the ones that go into definitely interested stack.
Wow.
I'll spend more time in with those. And then they're getting screened again to who I am going to actually have a phone conversation with. And I'll probably spend about a minute on that resume on the people that I'm going to speak with.
Wow, that's really, really helpful for the listeners, especially those who are looking for work at this point in time. Now, there's two phrases that you use. I don't know if these are original. If they are, they're brilliant. Even if they're not, they're brilliant. You talk about LinkedIn literacy and LinkedIn lunacy. My goodness, but what do you mean by these, please?
Well, so, you know, I had some fun with that. My degree was English, and I got put some alliteration into it. So, that was mine. LinkedIn literacy is placing information on your LinkedIn profile that'll grab my attention as a recruiter.
Oh, wow.
LinkedIn lunacy is the mindset of some managers and some recruiters that if you don't have the exact experience that the poorly written job description, almost in all cases,
oh boy,
mirrors, they're not interested in you. And if you don't have over 500 connections, especially if you're in sales.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, that's fascinating. No doubt about it. Now, one of the other things, and I believe this is your proprietary list here, what you would call an ultimate career search checklist. Share with us, please, a couple of items. What's on this checklist?
You know, I'll have to be really honest, Greg. I haven't looked at that for about a year, but, you know, what I strongly suggest is that as you go through each step, now my book is written in steps as opposed to chapters. So it's a step-by-step guide.
Yes.
At the end of each step, there is a checklist on all of the items that I brought up during that step. But I think the most important thing that must be on that list is, how often are you talking to people and networking with them?
Well, that makes perfect sense. Our Thank God for Monday listeners know, Bill, I'm a terrible reader. I don't like to read. I don't read well. This book is so wonderfully set up. Even I could read it and get so much from it. So it passed that test there. And before we end, certainly we're going to tell the listeners how they can get this great book. Time is moving along here, but I've got some more questions naturally to ask you. One of the things that I used to be in the Center for Career Exploration at wonderful St. Francis College, and even down here at Seton Hall, interviewing is difficult for students. Can you share with us a couple of tips for learning how to interview like a champion, please?
Well, there's some really important pieces in the interviewing process that everybody, students, people 63, need to know.
Mm.
One of those is, do your prep work. go through all the information on the website. I mean, everything on their website, because that can create questions for you to ask about that position or about the company as a whole. So that's really important to do. The other thing is I can structure questions, interview questions, 8 different ways.
Really?
I can. And my favorite is to ask a behavioral question. And as the person is responding to the behavioral question, I'll be nodding my head and smiling. And then they'll figure that they're finished and they'll stop. And then I go,
oh, wow. You prompt them for more.
I do.
Wow.
And you know what, Greg, and you'll really appreciate this. A lot of times people enter the confessional. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned.
Oh, that is brilliant.
And the first time I tried it, I thought, how long can I do this with this sales guy? 22 minutes.
Really?
Oh, and he told me stuff he way shouldn't have been telling me.
Oh my good. That is too much, Bill. That really, really is. Oh, just
so
incredible.
The way to get out of it. So I'm only doing this for your listeners and you.
Thank you.
The way to get out of this is if you start seeing this and, you know, maybe the first time you'll add some more information, then say, is there anything specific that you want me to talk about?
Oh.
As soon as I have to talk, that breaks the spell.
Wow. Oh, that is very, very strategic. No doubt about that. Now, one of the other things, especially for class of 2023 graduates, they go, they interview well, they got a great resume, they get the job offer. They're really challenged sometimes with negotiating salary. Can you help the class of 23 in particular, but people in general, with salary negotiation tips, please?
So one of the reasons that the cover of my book has a picture of a woman is the gender pay gap.
Oh.
And human resources probably don't understand this, but they are the ones who keep the gender pay gap going.
Oh.
Because in the application, they're asking, in some states they can, some they can't, they're asking, how much do you currently earn? And so if a woman is making 20% less than a male, then a lot of times the offer is going to be 5% above what they were making before.
Oh, wow.
So it just keeps it going.
Sure.
So it's best. So this is another little secret. So I'm only doing this for your audience.
Thank you.
You have to put a number in because that's what they make you do.
Sure.
Number one. That's a number.
Oh, that's, my.
Really? That's what you put in that space.
Oh, right. Because it won't accept it without a number. You just put one in there. Oh, again, that is absolutely brilliant. Wow.
Now, what everybody can do is they can ask you, how much money do you desire for this work?
Okay. All right. So that's a legal question then. Okay.
That's a legal question everywhere. The first one, there's 22 states that they can't ask that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The way you handle that, put the number one in.
Wow. Oh, absolutely brilliant, sir.
And so my script in my book tells the person how to work around that.
Good, good. Very, very valuable. Sorry to say, Bill, guess what? We've only got about 6 minutes and we want to shift gears now. It's Father's Day weekend. You have 2 grown daughters, and I perceive you're a grandfather as well. Each of them has a daughter, so congratulations. We're very curious. To encourage your daughters when they were a little younger to try new activities and then kind of let go and let them select the ones that interested them. Share with us, please, about this.
Well, you know, with children, the way most of them start is athletics, you know,
all right.
You know, when they're young, they start playing soccer or something like that. And then you just encourage them in their soccer playing, and they may decide they hate the sport. They may decide they love the sport, but honor that decision. And then later on, they may want to try other things like singing. Now, we had one daughter get up on stage in elementary school, probably in fourth or fifth grade.
Wow.
And she sang with somebody else on the stage. And she came off the stage and she said, "I will never do that again." And that was fine, you know? So we just said, yeah, that's great. At least you can cross something off your list.
Wow, and so that's wonderful how you empowered them to try different things.
That's, you know, encourage and empower them. And then if they come to us and say, you know, I'd like to try this or that, great, let's do it. So it's important to encourage your children to find new things, because that experience is going to help them later on, and then determine what it is they like and what they don't like.
Yeah, it's funny because somebody once very wisely said to me, "Greg, it's just as important for you to discover what you don't like in the workplace or socially or whatever as what you do." And so
it's
that's
true.
Great by you empowering the children to be able to find that landscape, both what you like and what you don't like. Very, very important. Now, clearly, Bill, you're a relationship expert. You would not have reached the heights that you have if you weren't. Any advice for parents of teens who might be beginning to date? This was a question that was asked, which really needs to be flushed out a little bit. And it's so common, but it's such a challenging area. Help us out, please.
Well, you know, it's really challenging for parents of daughters.
Yes, I would imagine. Yes.
You know, so what we taught our daughters is it's important to know who your friends are and to affiliate with the right friends, because that's how you will be measured.
Wow.
So that's number one. And then number two, both of our daughters said to me after they got out of college, "You know, Dad, you intimidated my boyfriends." But, you know, it really wasn't intimidation. It was responsibility.
Sure.
And so before, I think all the way up to about junior year, they had to be back at the house by 11.
Wonderful. That's
and
wonderful.
What I told the boyfriend was, "If you're not going to be here at 11, you better give me a call at a quarter of 11 and let me know why not."
Boy, that's great responsibility. No doubt about that. Thank you. That's wonderful, wonderful advice. We've saved, Bill, the most important question for last. From where can our loyal listeners purchase Expect Success? How can they best follow you, please?
It's easy. First of all, you can go to my website, recruiterguy.com, and it's got links to Amazon at least. And then Barnes & Noble has it. You can even get it at walmart.com. And possibly inside some Walmart stores.
Oh, wow.
So it's out there. And, you know, the other thing is many libraries are buying my book for their readers and their clients.
I'm not surprised. So, and I want to give your website again, www.recruiterguy.com.
Correct.
Okay, wonderful. Listeners, no excuse. This book is available everywhere. We have a great Franciscan with us today. Bill could have just held on to the good. He didn't have to get up extra early all the way in Utah and share this 30 minutes with us. He did. He shared his good. Now it's your turn. Please get out there. Buy one of these books, Expect Success, The Science of the Over 50 Career Search. Matter of fact, my recommendation is buy multiple copies. Get one for yourself. Give this as gifts. And I must say, even though it says the over 50 career search, I found this book helpful for students. It's graduation time for high school students, buy one for them, college students, really anybody in the workplace. This book would help tremendously. This book goes a long way in helping people really reach their dreams, reach their passions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Get out there and buy multiple copies, please. Bill Humbert, we can't thank you enough for coming back to Thank God for Monday. We've been enlightened this morning. We've been inspired. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Continued success, joy, contribution, all this wonderful work you're doing. And a very, very happy Father's Day to you. Enjoy your special day tomorrow.
Thank you, Greg. I will.
Listeners, that's about all we have time for today. But before we go, I want to certainly say a happy Father's Day to everyone. It's a very important day to honor the fathers. My father is in heaven right now, so I just say thank you, Dad, for all the infinite sacrifices you made to make my life here so wonderful. And I look forward to our reunion again in God's time. Listeners, that's all the time we have. Greg saying, my hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Bill does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week, have a great week, everyone, and a great Father's Day. Bye-bye.